all know people who are their own worst critic, people who assume every unknown situation is likely to end in the worst possible way, and people who can't seem to let go of past grievances. The classic advice, think about something else, sounds simple enough until you try it. It turns out to be surprisingly difficult to control our own thoughts. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. What we can do is learn not to assume everything we think and feel is a reflection of reality. My guest says, go ahead, notice those negative mental experiences, notice how they cause us suffering, and then train ourselves to scrutinize those thoughts and ask whether it is possible our sense of worthlessness or persecution or impending doom might be off the mark. Nancy Collier is a psychotherapist, interfaith minister, and regular contributor to Psychology Today. Her new book is called Can't Stop Thinking: How to Let Go of Anxiety and Free Yourself from Obsessive Rumination. Nancy, welcome to Think.
So glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
What made you start thinking differently about your own tendency to get lost in negative thoughts?
Well, every human, I suppose, on the planet, spend a lot of time thinking. And it served me well in my life. It's gotten me where I, you know, wanted to go. And certainly I was raised, as many of us are raised, to revere thinking, right? Thinking is the answer pretty much to everything. Think more about it and you'll find an answer. But what I found was, for myself, that I was spending a lot of time thinking about conversations that never happened or rehearsing events that maybe were never going to happen, certainly hadn't happened. But maybe worst of all, I spent a lot of time thinking about what I didn't like, mostly in other people, mostly in my partner and my significant other. And that all of that, if you put all of that together, that I was creating so much suffering for myself with my choices of what to think about and where to spend my time. And the book starts with an anecdote where I was walking in the park. It was a gorgeous day, and I was deep down in a rabbit hole, as most of us have been in, about, you know, why did he say that? You know, I should have said, you know, it's happening because of this, blah, 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 for the 112,000th time, going over the same problem, which more thinking had not helped. And I had one of those wake up moments, which was, wow, look at what I'm missing. This whole world, this moment, this now, and I'm down in this dark hole for absolutely no reason. And I got it. I really woke up in that moment to my own creation of suffering. Now, I'd been, you know, meditating and so on for years, and I'd been looking at my thoughts, but there was, and I was really lucky to have that happen. There was a real blessing of a moment that allowed me to break through.
So I think a lot of us are more likely to fixate on what hurts us, what worries us, than about things we're happy about or looking forward to. What do these negative thinking patterns have in common with addiction to a substance?
Well, you know, the gauge for addiction is I want to stop doing it and I can't. That's the gauge for addiction. And how many of us have had experiences where we're thinking and thinking and we can't stop? And that is thinking, right? We're fascinated with our thoughts. We're just absolutely fascinated with our thoughts. And we're in love with our thoughts. And we think that life would be meaningless without our thoughts. So that's how we feel about our addiction, right? You talk to a drinker and the drinker says, I couldn't live. I wouldn't be any fun without my drink or whatever your substance of choice is. I wouldn't be okay if I had breaks in between it. And even though some part of me desperately wants to stop, I can't. there it is. That's addiction.
Lots of people have heard the advice that we should just not allow ourselves to think these negative thoughts. Why does that not work, at least not for very long?
Well, most of us have tried that, right? That's the basic premise of self-help, right? Don't believe them, replace them with positive thoughts. You have negative thoughts, just insert a positive thought there. And what we find, though, is that, you know, it's a bit like putting a hat on dirty hair. When the going gets tough, the hair is still dirty. The negativity is still there. So we don't want to, we also don't want to be in a war with our thoughts so that our well-being depends upon the content of our thought. That's not a trustworthy system. So I want a system, I want real freedom, which means I don't have to replace it. And then when things get tough, they're the negative thoughts again, because I really haven't addressed them in any way. And I don't want a system where I'm always at war with the contents of my mind. And if some crazy thought is coming down the pike, I have to investigate it. I have to understand it, all of that sort of nonsense. I wanted to offer my readers a system where we have real freedom, so that in a sense, Chris, it doesn't really matter what thoughts your mind is pumping out at the moment. It's kind of like a broken computer. It sometimes pumps out helpful thoughts, but most of the time they're repetitive or they're negative. I wanted a system where our state of being is not dependent upon the craziness coming out of our mind.
So you start us off with a really provocative question. What if I am not my thoughts? What is the difference, Nancy, between having our thoughts and being our thoughts?
So thoughts appear, right? And one of our giant and profound misunderstandings is that we are those thoughts. We are raised from the time we're born to believe that, Descartes said it, right? I think, therefore I am. That we are the thinker, we are the thoughts. There's no separation between us and our thoughts. But when you start to really discover that you can see your thoughts arising, you can hear them, and you start practicing some of the practices I offer in the book, you recognize that, oh, wait, I'm the listener. I'm the one the thoughts are talking to. And this is the beginning of real freedom. So then there's a thought maker, this out of order computer, which, you know, like the pancreas makes insulin or any of these other organs do their thing, the mind makes thoughts. That's just what it does. And we're delighted that it does. But as we discover ourselves as the one who is at the receiving end of those, now we can start to, we can use discernment, we can have choice, we can use the thoughts that are helpful, right? Thoughts make a great servant, they just don't make a great master. So that's the fundamental shift of being thoughts to being the listener of thoughts.
When it comes to self-critical thoughts, some people might be saying to themselves, well, of course, inaccurate self-critical thoughts are obviously counterproductive, but I have real flaws. You suggest that we ask ourselves whether in addition to those flaws, there are other things that are also true. How does that work and what can it do for us?
When you're dealing with self-critical thoughts, right, we have to be very, very rigorous and vigilant, because they're a sort of persnickety sort. They really believe that that's the way to make you better. They really believe that that protects you. So we have to remind ourselves what we do again, reality checking, right? First of all, when I'm telling myself everything wrong with me, right, I'm not actually giving myself a chance to be the person I want to be, am I? I keep telling myself I'm a failure. I keep telling myself I never get it right, whatever it is. But what that does is it takes away any possibility for me to get it right. So first I say to those thoughts, give me a chance to be the person I'd like to be. I can't be listening to you all day long and have that chance to become someone I would like to be. The other thing that's really important in this process, and it applies to all of the negative thinking that we do, is the recognition of how much suffering this negative thinking causes us, the way the negative thoughts frighten us, the way the negative thoughts criticize us, the way the negative thoughts put us in a kind of state of victimhood or grievance or irritation. That's what really woke me up, I think, in that moment in the park, which was, I am putting myself in a state of grievance. I'm actually doing that to myself. And I don't have to bite this hook. So we really can't make any real fundamental changes until we have some compassion for what our thoughts are actually doing to us, if we don't find some way of choosing how we want to be in relationship with them.
Sometimes the negative thoughts that trap us come from some external source, right? Why do we have such a hard time moving on when we feel like someone else has wronged us?
Well, it's a good question. Part of what creates so much problem with someone else wronging us is that we don't feel properly validated, right? We run around telling everybody about our grievance because we don't, it's a way, again, I always look for what's self-protection here in this. We don't feel that it matters. Somehow we run around telling everybody because then it feels like it matters. It shouldn't have happened. We matter and that shouldn't happen to us. We're trying to get some kind of validation for our own suffering. And at the same time, we're always trying to make the world make sense. So much, as I said before, of the world resolves itself in, I don't know. We don't have an answer. And so much of the world resolves itself in things happen that are difficult. Not because you did anything wrong, not because of anything that we can name, but because that's part of the way the world works. And we run around with our grievances because we're trying all the time to say, it shouldn't be this way. Reality shouldn't be this way. We fight with reality. And always reality wins, right? Pick a fight with reality, reality's gonna win. So it's some way also of trying to level the field or make something sensible.
So it's like a way of saying our suffering matters, but it doesn't change anything.
That's right, that's right. And the grievance, particular kind of negative thinking, you know, it's such a toxin to gratitude. It's such a toxin to appreciation and also to presence, because we're so busy reminding ourselves of what happened to us that we didn't like, that there's no space to feel these little moments of appreciation for something that went our way or that we did like. You know, it's really a direct toxin to the very virtues that make us feel good, the very experiences that bring joy to our life. It just takes up all the space. So I say to myself, if I see the makings of a grievance, I always say to myself, don't bite the hook. You know, protect your now so that you can experience gratitude. Don't bite the hook.
Nancy, why is it a mistake to always assume our thoughts about things are true?
Well, anybody who's listening, right, knows that half the time we don't even believe our thoughts. Half the time I say to my own mind, does that sound true? it's so habitual for our mind to just sort of throw thoughts at us, right? But again, if we are in this slightly less in love with our thoughts place, slightly less enamored and reverential with our own mind, and we start to have this attitude, a little bit of doubt, a little bit of, I would even go so far as distrust. Is it true what you're telling me, mind? Right? Can I reality check? Wait a minute. The last 15 times that I lived something like that, didn't I kind of do okay? Are you talking about the person when I was 14 who did that? I think actually, mind, you're not letting me evolve into the person I've actually become. So it takes just very minor reality checking. But when we do that, we realize that much of the information that the mind is telling us is either something we've heard someone else say to us, like one of our parents, or it's saying something that supports some old narrative on ourselves, or it's saying something that we imagine is trying to protect us, as I've said before. But if we really look at it, it's actually not true. And even we don't believe it. So that is such a shift of becoming a bit wary about what our mind is telling us.
Lots of us also overthink interactions with other people in our lives, right? And we make assumptions that they dislike us or they judge us or they had some ulterior motive. How do we keep this from keeping us awake at night?
So coming back to the movie, right? The movie we're all writing. We're all writing a movie. We're the star, the director, the actor. We're all of it, right? So I ask people, and I would ask your listeners to always make this distinction, what happened and what was the narrative I wrote about it. So what happened? Okay, I handed my friend a present. What happened? She made a face that I didn't understand when I handed her the gift. Okay, my narrative, oh God, she hated the present I gave her for her birthday. She thinks I'm cheap. She thinks secretly that, you know, I don't think much of her. And we're off and running.
All right, I'm going to jump in here for a break, Nancy, and we'll come back to what might actually be true in just a minute. My guest is psychotherapist Nancy Collier. Her book is called Can't Stop Thinking: How to Let Go of Anxiety and Free Yourself from Obsessive Rumination. We'll be right back. So, Nancy, as we learn to climb outside these thoughts and feelings that our brain produces out of our control, can we also start to understand what causes them?
Well, I think we don't want to spend too much time, to be really frank there, with what and why. Because what that is it's another bait. Ooh, I can think about my thoughts. Oof, I'm back in, right? The mind is super excited now. I've got another bone. I would say that, you know, the mind is, it's, again, an out-of-order computer. It makes great dinner reservations, great grocery lists. We're so grateful for it. It distinguishes us as a species. It can do some really profound things. I'm thinking as I talk to you right now, as I wrote this book. But we don't want to get too fascinated with the who, what, why, when, and where of it. What we want to say is, the mind does all sorts of crazy things. Just like lungs pump oxygen, the mind makes thoughts. What do we want to do with this incredible tool? Do we want to let it control us? Do we want everything that it generates to determine our mood and be in reaction to it at all moments? Do we want to imagine it got the secret of the truth? Or do we want to use it for the useful tool that it is? Don't spend too much time with the whys. That is a seduction for the mind.
So as we build this habit of sometimes questioning the veracity of our thoughts and feelings, how might all this change our perception of who and what our self actually is?
That's a beautiful question. Yeah. So the profound shift, the life-changing shift that happens when you start to do the practices and start to look at your thoughts in a new way is that who you fundamentally are shifts from being the thinker and being identified with thoughts to being this presence within which the thoughts are happening. And that shift, right, it starts with being the listener, but then it moves into something that is so much more satisfying and joyful, where you are this presence, really. And all these sensations and thoughts are happening within it. But that presence is a place that has a spacious quality. It has calm in it. It has joy in it. It's more of a state of being. So we're not doing and thinking and aligned with thought. And it's a very hard place to really understand using just language. We have to practice it. But your fundamental sense of self shifts to more of a being state. It's like when we look in the sky, you know, from the time we're born, we look in the sky, you say to anybody, what do you see? And we all say, I see a plane or I see a bird. We're trained to go look at the object. But then I say to people, well, wait a minute, I see the sky. So when we shift from seeing what's in the sky to the sky, something really magical happens. We see the all. And that same shift happens for us and our fundamental sense of self. We become very wide, and the thoughts can be happening, sensation can be happening, events can be happening. But we can maintain this fundamental well-being that is deeply calm. And I just offer that as a sort of, spoiler alert, that really is the place that we land in terms of our own self-experience.
So there's this classic advice in our culture which says, follow your heart or trust your guts. And to me, that's always meant if you sense something strongly enough, you should listen to that despite all evidence to the contrary. Do you think that's bad advice?
I think that we're so trained in this culture to listen only to our thoughts. You know, what are we thinking? What are we thinking? What does reason say? What does reason say? We're the age of reason, right? And what we've gotten so untethered from is a deep intuitive knowing. There is a deep knowing, a wanting, a calling, whatever you want to call it, a hunger in all of us that is more bodily generated. And I think it's really wonderful advice to follow, to get in touch with what does my deeper intuition know, which sometimes doesn't line up with what reason or sense or all of that is telling us. And so I do think it's good advice to invite people and all of us to listen not just to mind, not just to thoughts, but this deep knowing that we call it's a gut knowing, it's a heart knowing, and it's often of what we really want, which often I will say doesn't maybe make sense to the mind entirely. I think we need to be very mindful and reverential with that knowing. It doesn't mean that we don't take into consideration what the mind knows. Well, if you follow that, but we have to give it a seat at the table, Chris. We have become so deaf and so blind to what is a deeper wisdom, the calling of each of us uniquely to fulfill our own journey. And that is not a mind-based knowing. It's just different.
I'm curious, Nancy, when you're working with a client or a patient, how many times you have to give this advice before you can feel people accepting it? Because I think the natural tendency is to push back and say, yes, other people may be thinking things that aren't entirely accurate, but my thoughts, they don't lead me astray.
Hundreds and hundreds. Hundreds and hundreds is the answer. Because everybody has drank the Kool-Aid. You know, our thoughts are the truth. Your thoughts, no, not so much. You've got it wrong, right? And also there is a deep sort of conditioning which makes us wary about questioning our mind. When you talk to people about you're addicted to your thoughts, they think you're crazy. Right? Thoughts are good. What are you talking about? Right? Thoughts are our best feature. What would I be without my thoughts? First of all, life would be utterly boring. And what would we be doing? Staring at a wall, saying om all day? We imagine life without this busy, busy mind life as an empty life, as a life with no meaning or fun. So any kind of questioning of the veracity or that you might not be your thoughts, it's almost like an existential kind of fear that gets kicked up because we don't have any touch with, well, if I'm not that, then how do I exist? What are you talking about? Yes, they're true. And what would I be if I weren't that? So it's really a paradigm shift at the most profound level. Not only are you not your thoughts, but this whole experience of being alive exists that is in relation with thoughts, but not entirely immersed in them. That is very hard for people to get with until they start tasting it. But again, it's speaking to your point of just the veracity, right? What does that mean if our thoughts are just our thoughts? It means, wait a minute, truth might be a little more relative than I imagine. That means I don't have all the answers. That means, so my husband's truth is also true. Wait a minute. Oh, now that's not okay, right? That means my truth is true and his truth is true and your truth is true. That means I might have to listen to your truth and kind of respect it. This system of my truth is capital T truth, and until I get you to have the same truth as me, I can't really exist comfortably because I can't exist if my truth is not validated. Well, suddenly it's I can have my truth and you can hear that, and your truth, I can hear your truth, and they can coexist. Well, now we can coexist, and I don't have to spend my entire life convincing you of my truth so that I can exist. But these are big shifts. Sometimes for some people, they happen really quickly. But I would say, you know, the majority of people, it's little glimpses many times, starting with, wow, my thoughts create suffering for me. Wow, I'm really caught in this rabbit hole. And wow, what are my thoughts saying? Oh my God, I can hear them, which means I'm not them. These little baby steps over time changes fundamentally who we are and our entire experience of life.
Are there surefire ways to measure our progress down that path?
Yeah. So our capacity when the negative thoughts are firing, right? I've been doing this a long time. And so I can hear them and say, yeah, no thanks. Yeah. Oh, it's Aunt Mary in the room. Look at her telling me of everything I've done wrong. No thanks. And really not be bothered. And I can also very, very clearly hear where my story is coming in and I'm departing from reality. I can really hear it. So I don't have to go down that, live that story. I don't have to believe it for a long time. It's almost like I feel now when I get off the path of reality and I get into my add-ons, my toppings. Or for example, I can just say to myself, sweetie, don't bite the hook. That's going to take you to suffering. I know that.
We're going to have to leave it there. Nancy Collier is a psychotherapist, interfaith minister, and contributor to Psychology Today. Her book is called Can't Stop Thinking: How to Let Go of Anxiety and Free Yourself from Obsessive Rumination. Nancy, it's been really interesting. Thank you for making time for us.
Oh, my pleasure. Delight.
You can like our page on Facebook. We're on Twitter at KERA Think. If you want the podcast, you can find it where you get podcasts. Just search for KERA Think and subscribe. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.